Welcome to Knowing God in the Word, brought to you by the Word of Truth Ministry, publishers of Seed and Bread. I'm your host, Bob Juno, with Bible teacher Nathan Johnson. This radio program is for the purpose of helping listeners fulfill the greatest need we have as believers, to know God. Today, Nathan will continue his teaching series on the book of Matthew with The Abomination of Desolation. And now, Bible teacher Nathan Johnson.
Thanks, Bob. We were studying the important prophecy of Matthew chapter 24. And the Lord was answering his disciples as to what would be the sign of his parousia and the sign of the consummation of the eon. He talked with them about the beginning of sorrows, and they would be delivered up to tribulation and persecuted. He told them many will betray each other, and false prophets will arise, lawlessness will abound, and the self-sacrificial love of many will grow cold. The one who endures to the end, however, will be saved. And now he continues from Matthew chapter 24 and verse 14. And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in all the world as a witness to all the nations. And then the end will come. So he speaks of this gospel. Notice that this gospel, not the gospel. And we must be careful here. And in much of the Christian world, the gospel is highly esteemed, and rightfully so. The gospel of our salvation is the gospel that brings us into right relationship with God. It tells us the truth that we must believe in order to be forgiven of our sins, cleansed of all unrighteousness, given imputed righteousness, brought into right relationship with God, and guaranteed a place in His glorious future. And so this gospel is and rightly should be exalted. And yet the exaltation of the gospel of our salvation has caused some to take this word gospel and make it to mean the gospel of our salvation. Like that's the only gospel. And that is the definition of the word gospel is the gospel of our salvation. Well, gospel was just a Greek word. The word is euangelion, euangelion. And that eu, eu on the front, means good. And angelion, notice angel, is from that word. It means a message. Now, some people say it is the good news. But, you know, part of the gospel is the fact that you're a sinner and that God does not respect sinners. They fall short of the glory, the esteem of God. And that the wages of your sin is death. No, that's not good news. Now, there's good news that you can be freed from that. But see, gospel isn't just inherently good news. It means a good message in the fact that it is a true message, a right message, a message delivered at the right time. And the fact is that while the gospel of our salvation is a good message, a true message, and a message, when it's delivered to save people today, is delivered at the right time, the time when the offer of salvation through faith in the gospel is open to all who will believe. And yet that doesn't mean that this is the only good, true message for every time and for every situation. Or that every gospel has to be the gospel of our salvation. No, the Bible speaks of gospel messages that aren't the gospel of our salvation. And the gospel Christ speaks of here is a gospel about the kingdom, about the government of God, not about our salvation. This gospel he's speaking of is the kingdom message. Now, what kingdom message is he talking about? Well, I don't believe he's talking about anything remote from this passage. It's contained right here, this gospel. And if you want to see what gospel he's talking about, I believe the gospel he's talking about is the message contained in Matthew 24, verse 4 to verse 13. So it takes in 10 verses. This message is brief. And if we just took it and read straight through it, it could be heralded in a short time. Even in the slow way they spoke at the time, it would only take maybe a couple minutes to proclaim this whole message. Now, at that future day, just prior to the Great Tribulation, this message is to be announced in all the world for a witness. Now, how long will it take to herald this message in all the world? Well, he says it'll be heralded and then the end will come. And same people have this idea, and they take from this idea, they say, Well, we know that there are the missionaries going out and carrying the gospel all over the world. And so as soon as the missionaries go out and carry it all over the world, why then the end will come. Well, if you have the idea of missionaries needing to learn various languages, and in some parts of the world, like in Africa, there are very, very, very many tribal languages. And then you imagine them having to learn the language and then go out and carry the message and bring it to the people. Well, this could take several generations to carry on a message. Yet understand, missionaries have been going out for a long time and with a lot of zeal. And even places that used to be closed to the gospel, like China, missionaries have gone into and carried the gospel. And really, are there places left where missionaries haven't carried the gospel? Now, if you think the gospel has to reach every single person, well, understand, there are people being born every second. And the gospel reaching every person is a moving target. Now, it's a good thing to strive for, to try to carry the gospel everywhere and to everyone. But if us reaching everyone with the gospel is a requirement, why, like I said, that's a moving target, and it doesn't seem anyone could ever reach it. Yet if you understand this statement to be what it should be in an honest, grammatical, historical interpretation, then understand that this short message could be heralded in all the world in 5 minutes. If the heralds had access to the internet, and it's something that everyone would pay attention to. And I see no reason to think that before the events of Matthew 24 take place, all the world will suddenly and inexplicably have returned to the technology of 2,000 years ago. You know, some people read the prophecies from 2,000 years ago, and that means the technology, when those prophecies are fulfilled, has to be the same as it was 2,000 years ago. Well, no. No, not at all. But this doesn't even have to be by technology. Understand that in God's kingdom, God will have his agents all over the world. And in every nation and among every people. And if God makes an announcement to them and tells them to spread it to everyone, why, they could do that in a very short time. Now, this gospel is said to be the gospel of the kingdom, and understand, as I've told you before, we just have the word kingdom in our Bibles because the Bible was first translated into English in England, where they had kings, and kings were their form of government. Yet we have governors, and so we use the word government rather than the word kingdom. But kingdom means government. And this message is a government message, the gospel of the government. Now, there are messages that are government messages. For example, Abraham Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation in the United States was a government message. It was not Lincoln's own personal message to the people of the United States. It was a government message proclaiming freedom for the slaves. Now, when Lincoln made this proclamation, it had to be posted at the courthouse of every county. Now, at the time, that was a slow process. Yet here, I believe there will be a different condition of things. And again, I think it's rather useless for us to think that there will be no information technology like the internet in the kingdom of God. Now, I will admit that, taken as a whole, our information technology has probably been far more of a bane to humanity than a boon. And that is because of the widespread distribution of pornography that has been caused by the internet. The deleterious effects of this far outweigh any good, in my estimation, that the internet has done. But the internet is used this way because of the corrupt hearts of human beings. And if our hearts were changed, as they will be in God's kingdom, these things could be used wisely as a blessing to mankind and for the glory of God. And I believe in God's kingdom, all technology will be considered wisely and limited wisely and used wisely for God's glory. Now, preached here doesn't mean that someone stands up and gives a sermon. It means heralded or announced. And like I said, if you read Matthew 24, verses 4 through 13, just read it aloud, you would be heralding it. You wouldn't be preaching a sermon based on it. You'd just be heralding it. Now, all the world means in the whole system, the entire inhabited earth. The Greek word is oikoumene. Oikos being the word house, and it basically means the world is inhabited, the inhabited world. Bullinger says it is the civilized world as opposed to the barbarian. That's how the Greeks would use the word. And this gospel will be heralded in the whole inhabited world as a witness. And a witness testimony brings those who hear it under responsibility. Now, the words Christ speaks here are to his 12 disciples. And when God's kingdom comes, these will be men in authority and leaders who have responsibility. Now, God's message to these 12 is that this divine message of the government is to be heralded in all nations. And then the end will come, the end of this time of the beginning of sorrows. And again, people say that this means that when missionaries reach every inhabited place, then the end will come. But as far as we can tell, the missionaries have done that and gone into all the world and borne a witness to the gospel of our salvation to all nations, and yet the end did not come. But see, this passage never applied to missionaries going out. This will be a divine directive coming straight from God to the leaders in that day. And they will be able to make this announcement in all the world at that time, in a very short period of time, and then the end will come. The end is the Greek telos, the conclusion, and that will conclude these beginning of sorrows that he's been talking about in the beginning of Matthew 24. And now he goes on to the abomination of desolation, verse 15. Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation, spoken of by Daniel the prophet, standing in the holy place, whoever reads, let him understand. So here we have an abomination. That's a very strong word. It means something horrible, something horrifying, something nauseating, something that should turn your stomach and fill you with disgust. Now, a good thing to keep in mind is what Christ said in Luke 16 and verse 15. You are those who justify yourselves before men, but God knows your hearts. For what is highly esteemed among men is an abomination in the sight of God. And this is true. Many things that are highly esteemed and honored and respected among men are just hideous, disgusting in the sight of God. There are many such things in our world today. Many things that are just highly respected by humanity that God finds revolting. Now, in their day, idolatry was one such thing. And it was very highly respectable to worship idols, to worship statues of many pagan gods. And it was generally thought that good people did this. This is just what you do, worship these idols. It was highly respected. And yet God found it disgusting. Now, in this case, it will be akin to this. This abomination will be a man, the man of sin, the little horn, the Antichrist, will be setting himself up as a living idol. We read of this in 2 Thessalonians 2, verses 3 through 4. Let no one deceive you by any means, for that day, that is the day of the Lord, will not come unless the falling away, the apostasy or rebellion, comes first. And the man of sin is revealed, the son of perdition, who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he sits as God in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. So this will be the abomination that causes desolation. It's the man of sin himself, the Antichrist himself, seating himself, taking up official position in God's temple, declaring himself to be God. Now, this is said to be the abomination that causes desolation. And other than the parallel verse in Mark 13 and verse 14, the only other reference we have to desolation in the New Testament is that Jerusalem will be a desolation after it is surrounded by armies in Luke 21 and verse 20. Now, the abomination that causes desolation, I believe, does so because it brings on the special wrath and punishment of God. Now, this abomination of desolation that Christ speaks of, he says, was spoken of by Daniel the prophet. And it was. Back in the book of Daniel, chapter 11 and verse 31. And forces shall be mustered by him, and they shall defile the sanctuary fortress. Then they shall take away the daily sacrifices, and place there the abomination of desolation. And it was also spoken of by Daniel in Daniel chapter 12 and verse 11. And from the time that the daily sacrifice is taken away, and the abomination of desolation is set up, there shall be 1,290 days. Blessed is he who waits and comes to the 1,335 days. And I believe the end of the 1,335 days is basically when the wedding feast of the Lamb begins, when Christ is on earth and the celebration of his presence begins among his people. But Christ says that this abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet will be set up in this future day. And so this shows false all interpretations of Daniel 11 and 12 that make the one setting up the abomination of desolation to be Antiochus Epiphanes in the 2nd century BC, setting up an idol in the temple and sacrificing a pig to it, which is how many people today tend to interpret these passages. Well, no, Christ said this is something future. And so all these interpretations are shown to be false. Now, standing here means taking his stand. And again, like I said, I don't believe in this case it will be an idol, but it will actually be a man idol, a man declaring himself God, a human idol, taking his stand in the holy place. Now, the holy place, there's no doubt about it, the holy place is a place in the temple of God. And we know from 2 Thessalonians 2 and verse 4 that there is a man of sin who will seat himself in the temple of God and who will set himself forth as God and the one to be worshipped. And this is the abomination that will make the temple desolate. And yet note carefully that before this can ever be fulfilled, there has to be a temple in Jerusalem. Moreover, it can't just be any temple. It has to be the temple of God, which means it has to be owned by God. It has to be acknowledged by God. And there has to be in it the holy place that is holy to God. Now, since we know very well that the temple of God does not exist on earth today, this means that it will have to be rebuilt. Now, to those today who like to point out that the Jews have a plan to rebuild the temple, and if just some deal could be worked out with the Muslims, or the Muslims could be defeated in some war or something, and the Dome of the Rock could be moved or removed, why they're already, they could build the temple today. Well, we must keep in mind Psalm 127 and verse 1. Unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain who build it. Now, while this is not necessarily spoken only and exclusively about the temple, certainly it applies to the temple as much as to anything. That God's temple can't be built unless the Lord builds it, Jehovah, Yahweh himself. The temple of God can't be built by a decree of the United Nations. The temple of God can't be built just because the Jews went to war with the Muslims. Because the temple of God can't be built by the efforts of mankind. Now, even if a building some people call the temple were built on the proper temple site, if this building was built without Jehovah being involved, it would not be his house. So its so-called holy place would not be holy, and none of the things Christ said here will be true. If a bunch of Jews in rebellion against God and his Messiah, Jesus Christ, decided to build a temple on the proper site, that wouldn't be God's temple any more than if I decided to build a temple in my backyard. That would be as much the temple of Jehovah as one in Jerusalem on the site, if Yahweh was not involved in building it. There's no difference between my backyard temple and a temple rebellious Jews build on the temple site. If the Lord isn't involved in building the house. When the temple is rebuilt, Jehovah must be involved. And Jehovah will never be involved as long as Israel remains in rebellion against him by rejecting Jesus as his Christ. But understand, only Israel can build the temple. But not an Israel in rebellion against God, only an Israel submissive to and obedient to God, and recognizing, serving, and obeying his Messiah, can ever build his temple. They absolutely cannot do it while they continue to stubbornly and rebelliously reject the Messiah he sent to them. Only after they learn to say, in the words of Matthew 23:39, "Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord," only then will Israel be able to rebuild the temple and have it truly be God's house and have it truly contain his holy place. Now, in the prophetic schemes of most, there is no place for this to happen. And I believe that the only answer to this is the fact that there will be a premillennial kingdom of God, government of God on earth, in which God will draw Israel to himself, reveal himself to Israel, reveal Christ as their Messiah. They will submit to him. He will bring them back into their land, and he will command the rebuilding of his temple. And this is the only way this prophecy could ever be fulfilled, is if God restores Israel first, not the United Nations. Now, it is as this premillennial kingdom period is drawing to a close that the rebellion described in Matthew 24 takes place. And the man of sin defiles the holy place, the true holy place built by an Israel returned to as submissive to Christ. Now it says, whoever reads, let him understand. And this is a significant phrase. Now I doubt it was spoken by Christ at the time. It was probably added in by Matthew in this place to those reading his gospel, and by Mark in the same place in Mark 13, verse 14. Because, of course, Christ wasn't reading, he was speaking. Unless Christ was referring to the reading of Daniel. Now remember, Daniel was said to be a book that was sealed. Its meaning was sealed up, couldn't be understood. Well, that's because they didn't have the information we have in places like 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 and the book of Revelation to tell us who this man of sin is and what this abomination of desolation is. And I believe that by the time Matthew was writing his gospel, both 2 Thessalonians and Revelation had been written. Now, I know a lot of would agree about 2 Thessalonians, but wouldn't agree about Revelation. But that's another topic. Verse 16, then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. So when this man of sin takes over and takes his stand in the holy place, then will be the time for those in Judea to flee into the mountains. Now, does this mean I will have to flee? It'll be time for me to flee into the mountains. Well, here's the thing. I don't live in Judea now, and I don't expect to be in Judea in that future day any more than I am now. Many talk about fleeing to the mountains as if it is something that all believers everywhere in the world will have to do. Well, I'm in the flat Midwest of the United States. There are no mountains anywhere near me. So where would I flee? I would have to cross many, many huge plains before I could ever get to mountains. But those in that day who are in Judea need to flee to the mountains that are right there nearby in Judea. It will be very plain and obvious to them. Well, why is it that it is those in Judea who need to flee? Well, in studying prophecy about Judea and Jerusalem and Israel, it should be most evident to all that Jerusalem will not be a city whose chief purpose is a place for people to live, though there are those who will live there, but it will chiefly be a center of government like our Washington, D.C. Jerusalem is the city that centers the government, and Judea compares to what we would call the county or district that Jerusalem is in. And in that day, this is where the government of Israel, the most significant nation on earth, will be centered. And the many, many people who make up that government will be living there. When the man of sin desires to move against and wipe out God's government, the people who live in Judea are the ones he will be interested in wiping out. And that's why God warns them that they must flee into the mountains. Now understand that the mountains of Judea today, and probably in the kingdom as well, are not unfriendly mountains. Although they could get cold at night in the wintertime, and there isn't a lot of water there, at least right now, although the kingdom might change things. But they could flee to the mountains, and it would be a relatively pleasant place to flee to. But you can see that these are instructions for the people living at that time, in that place, in that situation, and they're not instructions for you and for me. So the gospel of the kingdom will be proclaimed in all the inhabited world for a witness. This is not what we do when we proclaim the gospel of our salvation today. No, that's a different gospel. The abomination of desolation seems to be the man of sin himself, setting himself up in God's temple as God. Yet this requires a legitimate God's temple and a legitimate God's holy place, something that cannot happen until Israel acknowledges Jesus as their Messiah. Once this abomination is set up, those in Judea are to flee to the mountains. Yet you and I are not in Judea, and many of us have no mountains to flee to. We must keep this prophecy in its proper place and context. And we'll study more about its meaning and interpretation in our next message.
What a wonderful thing it is to understand Bible prophecy. When we study all of these events out to their full conclusion, a beautiful picture begins to emerge. The gospel of the kingdom is not the gospel of our salvation. It is the good and proper news for the Israelites living in this future time period. Thank you, Nathan, for your lesson on the abomination of desolation. On our next program, Nathan will continue his teaching series on the book of Matthew with the Great Tribulation. Thank you for joining us today. Our hope is that the more you study God's Word, the more you know and love God. For more information on the program, to hear past programs, and for other free material that Nathan has produced, please visit our website at knowinggodintheword.org. This program has been brought to you by the Word of Truth Ministry. Please visit seedandbread.org. I've been your host, Bob Juno, with Bible teacher Nathan Johnson. So long for now. We look forward to you joining us next week on Knowing God in the Word.